As you can tell, probably tell, I struggled with titling this session Coping with Step Families or Coping with Families from Hell. I think I called it this time. It's hard to know what to call this. A little background on myself. I'm a pastor of a small church in Moscow, Idaho, Combined American Baptist and Disciples of Christ Church. I've been married twice. I'm in my second marriage. It was my wife who came in with the baskets and harassment. First time was married for 18 years, and I had a daughter by that marriage. Then divorced and remarried about 5 years ago, and currently in a step family with my daughter and my wife's two children. She has children who are 8 and 11, and my daughter is 9. I've been doing work on step families, blended families, for about 5 years. As a way of self-preservation, I guess, would call it. Have just completed a doctoral dissertation on doing ministry with step families, and have done a good amount of research and reading. So that's kind of my background. Where do you folks come from? First, what are your names?
We're from Trinity Lutheran Church in Everett, Washington. I'm Mike Denny. My wife, Gail.
Karen Young.
I'm Chuck.
Okay.
Winston Cabert. And I should tell you ahead of time that I have to go and give my daughter 15 minutes.
So this is getting even for me running out of your session.
I wanted you to build it.
Oh, okay.
I'm from Portland.
Okay, great. Any experience with step families or blended families?
Yes.
Okay.
Very similar to yours. Married 16 years. Had a daughter from that marriage. Divorced. Remarried to Gail. And so we have our 14-year-old stepdaughter and her 9-year-old son that lives with us, and are balancing those kids between their other parents, those things.
Okay.
We don't have any direct experience ourselves. We've been married ourselves for 28 years. We have two children, and we have a daughter who's 27, has two children, two different fathers, married once, divorced, you know. So we're involved in it in the role of grandparenting.
Right, okay.
And that can be just as tough.
It can be just as tough, which is something that people don't really understand a lot of the time. That with a divorce, it's not just that nuclear family that gets torn up. It's the extended family, and especially if your grandparents and the parents of the male who typically doesn't get custody, sometimes that grandparent relationship can just be torn up and totally lost. But even in your situation, there are adjustments to make. The reason I titled this Coping with Families from Hell is because of a common experience that I've had both in my own life and in working with step and blended families. And time again have encountered people who, coming into marriage, thought that they'd done all of their homework. Come on in. people thought that they'd done all of their homework, that they introduced themselves to the children, that they developed good relationships, that everything was on the up and up, everything was going fine. You know, they had done their homework, so now they were planning on getting married, living happily ever after, and they planned the ceremony. You know, it's a wonderful wedding, and they come home from the 12-hour honeymoon, and and everything has changed. Everything has switched, and all of a sudden there is chaos, there are hurt feelings, there is animosity, there is confusion, and nobody knows what is happening. And this dream of reestablishing, of creating the family that had never been, quickly goes straight down the tubes. Along with a lot of disappointment and hurt feelings. If we look at second marriages with children, one of the things that we see is that they tend to be highly stressed relationships. Divorce rates in our country are high, as it is. Over 50% of people who marry will end up in a divorce. For people remarrying with children, it's hard to get an exact number because census people don't ask the right questions. But the best estimates are that between 60 and 65% of remarriages with children will end up in divorce, and the majority of those will crash in the first 4 years.
We made it.
Congratulations.
You can relax now.
We have our fourth anniversary in November.
Oh, still got a couple months.
Don't count your chickens before they hatch.
But after your anniversary, be sure and call the Census Bureau. And let them
right. Really. But one of the things that I've come to be really convinced of is that one of the reasons. Blended families, step families, again, it's hard to know what to call these things. There's no adequate name. One of the reasons that they're difficult is that they look so much like first-time nuclear families. And, you know, it's kind of like the city slicker that goes to the farm. And, you know, the farmer says, well, you know, would you go out and milk the cow for me? And the city slicker said, well, yeah, that's easy enough. I'll go to do what I am. He said, well, you know, the cow's just out in the corral. They take her in the, you know, to the barn and give her some grain and milk her, you know, and she's calm. And, you know, the city slicker goes out and comes back about 20 minutes later, just all bloody and bruised and torn up. And says, I thought you said that cow was calm and nice. The farmer says, well, yeah, she is. He says, well, wasn't that way to me. I grabbed a hold of that ring on her nose and she just went wild. Nuclear family, first-time families and step-families look similar, but I'm really convinced that they are totally different animals. And that to understand them, we have to look at them with different eyes, with different understandings. Some things that make them different. You've noticed me sort of going between step families and blended families, and I could keep going back and forth because there's no good name. Step family, that's comes from the German, I think it was Stiel, meaning death. Families originated from death because in the old days they were generally formed by one of the parents dying very often. A woman would die in childbirth, and so then the man would go marry somebody else to be parent to his kids. So families of death, I mean, that's not a real cheery name. Blended, that doesn't work very well either. What is it that you say, Bart?
It's like being in a blender, being all chopped up and bloody.
Yeah. It's like being in a blender. If you think it's going to come into a homogeneous whole, it generally doesn't. There are some unique situations where the personalities work just right, but generally it doesn't. Some things that make step families unique. One is that there is a relationship between parent and child that predates the adult relationship. And this is really, really crucial, because what this means is that very often the remarriage for the child is a loss rather than a gain. In the divorce process or in the death of a parent, the child has already experienced one pretty traumatic loss. The family constellation, even if the parent is just down the street now or across town, there is a loss there of proximity and relationship. That happens with divorce. Then there's the single parent episode, where very often there is a real unique kind of relationship that is created with the child. Sometimes what I call spousification happens. The male child of a woman becomes the little man of the house, or the female child becomes the little woman of the house. Very often in single parent families, there isn't enough energy, especially if there's more than one child, for the parent to really do consistent limit setting. And you just get so tired dealing with work and everything that you get overwhelmed and you go home, break the window, I don't care, It's not quite that bad. Do you experience any of that as a single parent?
Especially during the divorce process of my divorce. Uh-huh. I found that I had probably a good year where I don't think I was a very good parent. And I had been a very consistent disciplinarian. I mean, mm-hmm. not hardline, but I was real consistent. I had real set limits for him when he was a tiny child, and then at three, divorced. And that following year really was not very good at setting limits at all. And I had somewhat of a little monster on my hands. And it took me, I'd say he's at nine now, a pretty controlled child, but it took a number of years to really, sure. I mean, you blow it for even a few months, and
I'm sorry to get back on the top of it. And that's one of the things that often happens is that the adult in a divorce is so busy taking care of their own pain,
sure.
and their own brokenness that they have a hard time coping with all of the needs of the child. But anyway, then during this single parent phase, it tends to be a unique relationship built with the child. Then comes in this new adult. And with remarriage, what that means is very often yet another loss for the child, because they have to get moved out of that relationship place that they had. You know, it was a real shock for my daughter, to come bounding into my bedroom of a Saturday morning. She liked to, come in and, bounce on the bed and, kind of snuggle. So I mean, she came bouncing in. Here was another woman. You know, who's this? You know, and
she didn't know
what
I was.
Huh?
She did.
Well,
I need to clarify that.
You're right. But but it was, what is she doing? You know, and so there's loss of place. So marriage can remarriage can be a real severe loss, yet again for the child, and it can be very confusing. Them not knowing where it is that their place is. Children don't deal with change real well. They do a lot better with consistency. And remarriage can be yet another loss. At any point, feel free to jump in here or ask questions. I don't want to just be a talking head. So.
One thing that just popped in my mind was, I think for my son, the loss of that you're talking about in the new marriage. I think there were two losses for him. One was and probably for most people, the one loss was the change in his relationship with me. He was used to trotting in the middle of the night and coming and crawling in bed with me, and couldn't do that anymore, and that whole thing that you were talking about. But the other thing was the loss of the fantasy that someday his dad and I would get remarried, which I understand, at least from everything I've read, that all kids harbor, the fantasy that mom and dad will someday get back together. And he is we've been married almost 4 years, and he still, on occasion, will ask me when Mike and I are going to get divorced so that I can marry his dad again.
Well, our kids were doing some sort of creative problem solving among themselves, they were coming up with scenarios where, Barb's ex and my ex would all live together in the same house. I think it got a little too complex once my ex-wife remarried, and I'm not sure that my daughter could fathom all of that. But it was a good 3 or 4 years after we were married that fantasy died. And very strong fantasy, yeah. Okay, some other things, other aspects that create stress in step families. One is kind of a cultural thing, and gives rise to, has anyone ever heard of a wicked stepmother? You ever felt like one?
No, I don't think that I have, but I did chuckle one time when we went to see, what was that movie, My Stepmother is an Alien?
Uh-huh.
She was the one that wanted to go. Erica said we needed to go see My Stepmother is an Alien.
But my daughter and Gail struck up quite a good friendship before Gail and I were married.
Yeah, uh-huh. She and I have been fine, really, all along. I don't think that... Mm-hmm. conflicts her, but she doesn't live with us full-time.
Yeah. There would be more conflict where she
lived. I'm sure. I know there would be, because her relation, you know, I mean, I can see it on a daily basis when she's there. I have things that I let her get by with and I just don't say much about. I know that if she were living there and this were her permanent residence, I mean, this wasn't going to work.
There would be problems.
Exactly. So yeah. I'm able to do that because she's not there all the time.
I think one of the things that's happened culturally is that it's almost inevitable that the myth originated. Because what happens, I think, is that women typically have the role of homemaker, caretaker of children, nurturer. And at least historically, when women died in childbirth and a man would go out and marry new a wife and hand over all of his existing children, you know, what he would then do is leave. And he would go, okay, they're all yours. And, you know, perfect formula for disaster. No relationship.
Cinderella's father never even came back.
Pardon?
He didn't even go to work.
Huh?
Cinderella's father didn't even go to work.
Yeah, he just never came.
He's not in the story.
I think he died.
I don't think they ever told what happened to Cinderella's father, but he's not even in the picture.
Yeah.
It's just this woman dealing with his stepchild.
He had this brat of a kid, and couldn't put up with her. So, no. But what happens is that the woman is cast into a role that is built for failure, because typically what happens with kids is that there is some kind of loyalty conflict that goes on. And you might think that it would be better if the parent had died, but that's a myth, because what the children will do is create a fantasy parent who is almost a saint and impossible to cope with, you know? Kids who never really knew their parent when they were alive will create this construct that the step-parent can't compete with.
So you mean it wouldn't even do any good if we had our ex-spouses killed?
Right.
They just create better ones.
Right.
Well, and that's also...
there goes that solution.
That's also true when the parent moves away and disappears. You know, often, uh-huh. often, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, the father would just leave the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was as good as dad, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, they idealize, the more dysfunctional the parent is and how the parent has left their life, the more they will fantasize with how wonderful that parent is. So really, an ex-spouse next door could be ideal.
Because they see the reality on a daily basis.
Actually, my ex-spouse is about 6 blocks away, and it's very little trouble because he's so close to the Bob.
Mm-hmm. Except for the one time he took us to court.
Yeah.
Loyalty conflicts with the children, though, are real common. If the child sees the other parent on a regular basis, it's very easy for the child to get into the spot of going, well, can I like my stepmother? Is that being disloyal to my real mother? Can I like, you know, can I really play with my stepfather and like and liking him? Is that being disloyal to my real father? And takes a little maturity in the children before they can figure out and separate out those loyalty conflicts. That's one of the tensions that is feeding into the mix of tension in the step family home. Other tensions, just the nature of step family life. People ask us, well, what size is your family? And our standard answer is, it depends on what day it is. There's one day a week when there are no kids, except every other week when on the weekend there are no kids, and then every other weekend we have three kids, and then 3 days a week there are two kids, and sometimes if we get out of sync, then on the weekend there's only one kid, and so the definition of what is family becomes much more fluid people in a first-time nuclear family. They know who is in the family and who's outside of the family. There are names for all of the roles that have been handed down through history. We know who grandmother is, and grandfather, and aunt, and uncle, and cousins, and for all of these roles. But in the step family, it gets a little confused. My daughter wasn't real sure. Now, let's see. The grandparents of Barb's children were coming. The parents of her ex-husband. They were coming to visit him. And my daughter wasn't sure if they were going to bring her a present too. Now, what relation are they? No, you have to explain. They aren't any relation. They're over there. The number of relationships that are involved in set families gets just incredibly can I get somebody to grab this? Let's say we got Bill and Sally here, and three children, and these are step parents here. Our grandparents. See, I'm getting 15 years old. Everybody knows who everybody is. If you take these nine people, you have possible interactions among them. I think, if I remember right, there's 253 possible different groupings and interactions that you can have. Okay, if Bill and Sally here get divorced, and they marry somebody else here, and say there's two kids here, and it's married here, and there's one kid here, and it's geometric. Anybody have any idea of how many different interactive relationships?
Can you define what that 253 is? I mean, when you say possible interactions, what do you
that
in possible relationships with cousins, aunts, uncles?
Yeah, well, no, just among these people.
Oh, okay.
And different group, different amalgams.
Okay.
You might have these seven together, or these four.
Okay.
Okay, but
so you have to go at least to double power, 253 times 253 times 253. in order to, you know, geometrically do that, you've got to add another more beyond that. Mm-hmm.
And then you have yet another set of grandparents that aren't shown there because the child, stepchild has other grandparents from another.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
From another parent.
Right.
And another ex-spouse somewhere floating around.
Right. And you got these out here and another ex-spouse out here. That's it. Thank you. That's it. That's it. That's it.
So
okay. So any idea of how many possible interactions you have here? Yes.
10,000.
10,000.
Probably a
million. Over 8 million. You know, and you know, here's little Johnny down here, you know, at 4 years old, trying to figure it all out.
I have a little 6-year-old grandson, and he is trying to figure that all out.
And you know, who's who, and you know, who's on first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you get to it, like for our grandson, he's got, you know, or grandma and grandpa, and then there's grandma and grandpa B, and then his dad remarried, and so now they've got grandma Joe, and God, it goes on forever.
And then he's got a half-brother, and there's grandparents there.
Yeah.
It is so confusing that...
Yeah. And so they can't
crazy
keep track.
For him.
They can't keep track of who it is, and so like my ex-son-in-law's wife tries to push her children at us as if they were our grandchildren. I can't understand that. No, they're not our grandchildren, you know, they're nice little kids, but they're not our grandchildren, and we're not going to treat them that way, you know, to the point where she won't let our grandson go see his other grandparents,
his real dad's family,
at all,
because
she won't, because they can't take all them. I mean, it gets
crazy.
She's always trying to figure out what's going on.
Right, and it gets crazy.
I've always said Matt's life is crazy. He doesn't know where he belongs.
Yeah. And, you know, and on any given day of the week, you know, this child, you know, might have a family like this, maybe like this, or like this, or like that, or, you know, and around and around it goes. And all of that changing creates stress. That's not always bad, but it has to be dealt with. You know, it has to be recognized. And
it's great at birthdays and Christmases.
Yeah, oh, they love it, birthdays and Christmases.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 3 weeks worth of Christmas. I mean, you know that.
Except when you get the, like, the example I'm thinking of is his daughter getting her feelings somewhat hurt because my son might get gifts from friends of ours who don't know her as well, or from my parents who... still, even though she's my stepdaughter, she doesn't live with us permanently, so mm-hmm. my parents still don't really see her as part of the family.
So they send, Joshua lots of things and Erica one thing.
Right. Uh-huh. You know, and yet they're not obligated to buy, you know, presents. So but you get those kind of situations too where
right.
some hurt feelings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some other things that lead into stress and conflict and that kind of thing. Some myths. You know, we've talked about the wicked stepmother myth. You know, that hangs around because there's a germ of truth to it. You know, it's you know, we put women into impossible situations sometimes. Yeah.
Does that work more for daughter mother kinds of relationships versus a boy mother? Is it more of a problem for girls?
It's more of a problem with stepdaughters and stepmothers than it is with stepmothers and stepsons. Okay. And I'm not sure why that is, but that's been fairly well substantiated with research. Might be that when you have a step family with a Stepfather, stepson. Typically, again, given our culture, the mother is there in the home doing the homemaking, nurture, care. So, you know, with the change of our culture, that's changing. But still, predominantly, women are given that nurturing role, and so in that case, it would be the woman nurturing her own son. Put a stepdaughter in there, and if the man is then out working, likely more sense of abandonment with the stepdaughter, more resentment, being left with this woman that she doesn't know from Eve, and where there's no natural relationship.
Is it more usually a more severe problem for the stepdaughter, stepmother than it is for the stepson, stepfather?
Yeah.
It's more typically a problem with stepdaughter than any relationship.
Yeah.
The girls typically have a harder time than the boys. My personal opinion on that is that females are just oriented into relationships. That's our, you know, we spend our lives trying to connect. And then boys are, you know, their goal is to kind of break away from mom. And so I think that's where the girls have, you have more trouble with my daughter than you do with my son.
Yeah. Yeah. Some other myths that come into play that kind of set the step family up for a conflict. As adults, you know, we come into relationship, we fall in love, you know, isn't it wonderful? You know, we found this new relationship and it's great. And, we found this wonderful woman and how could anybody not love her? Mm-hmm. And so the assumption is that instant love will happen, you know, and that, you know, because the adults love each other, that the children and the adults will automatically love each other. Doesn't work that way, because of some of these factors that we're talking about, you know, the loss, the loyalty conflicts, sometimes, you know, you have an ex out there who is actively sabotaging, with the children. Ever hear of the phrase of Disneyland dad or Disneyland mom, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It gets to be a competition between biological parents, which just heightens the sense of a conflict for the child. And you can't always do a lot about that. There are some guidelines, in terms of, you know, not using children as messengers. If you're going to communicate with the ex-spouse, do it directly, not, well, you tell your dad.
But that Disneyland dad thing, I got into that. When we first divorced, my daughter was 7, I saw her every other weekend.
Mm-hmm.
All I got her. And so those weekend visits became a time to entertain her. And it wasn't that, I didn't realize what I was doing, but I was constantly just trying to show her a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd go home and get back into the normal routine with her mother, where she had to be to bed at a certain time and they didn't always do the fun things and she was disciplined on a regular basis. And her mother had enough insight to call me and say, we need to talk. And we discussed that situation and I realized that I wasn't doing anything positive for my daughter by being a Disneyland dad, a mm-hmm. person who was always trying to show my daughter a good time. So we cut down some of those activities and tried to get into more of a normal,
a regular
kind of routine.
Good.
But we talked about it. And a lot of, I've got friends who've gone through divorce where they don't talk to their ex-spouse at all.
Mm-hmm. That's the one thing we both have that's real positive, is that we both have real good relationships with our ex-spouses. I mean, we don't personally like the people, but we have
that's a why you're divorced.
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you still like them, you'd still be married to them. But we are very pleasant, and we have lots of times school functions for the kids. All four of us have gone together, or, you know, or not all four, but I mean, like the three, in the case of his daughter, the ex-wife, and he and I, and in the case of my son, my ex, and the three of us. So, you know, we do those things and we keep real open communication. And I think you're right. I mean, because I know people who say, I mean, I wouldn't talk to the guy on a bet. You know, they, any communication goes through the attorney. And,
right.
And the kids, I mean, it's got to be really tough on the kids. That's got to, you know, because we have our challenges as it is with the good relationship. And I can't imagine what it'd be like to get somebody you wouldn't even talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Do you
real talk?
But the situation much different when there isn't a competing spouse, but that one of the persons has been widowed. Now there's a new relationship that obtains between the children and the remaining parents, and probably a stronger relationship than would be normal with grandparents, including the grandparents of the
deceased,
who feel some kind of guilt that our child isn't taken care of, so we have to pick up some of this. The mother, let's suppose it's a widow, the mother is very eager to do the best by her children that she can, and so when she falls in love with the new mate, he's not falling in love with the children, he's falling in love with her. And as much as her wanting a lover, she's wanting a father for those kids. And that puts a tremendous strain on what's going on here, that if he loves her enough to want to be the father of these children, and he probably does, he wants to be sure that she is loving him also for just being him. And now the children, with whom there's been a special bond, they've been taking the place of the husband in many ways in the show of affection, and they fill that role very well, and suddenly that role is not going to be theirs anymore. Now, we're speaking from experience. Yeah. We have a son who went through this. And,
yeah, it's hard. You know, there are a number of pitfalls there. For instance, the man is being set up in some ways. If he is expected to come into that family constellation and act as father, that sets him up for failure. It is real important for step parents, either male or a female, to establish a really good friendship bond with the children before they try to do any kind of discipline. This isn't always possible, but you know, whenever possible, the step parent should be kept out of that discipline authoritarian role until there is a solid relationship base that has been established. Otherwise, the child will resent any authority and very often really rebel against it, try to undermine it. And you know, this again gets back to how historically women have been set up as being the wicked stepmothers. You know, because they come in, there's no relationship established, and they're expected to have some authority and do discipline with these people with whom there's no relationship. You know, sometimes it takes a long time. You know, we've been married five years, and We discipline, you know, the other's kids, you know, sometimes, but still predominantly. You know, we act as the heavy with our own kids. That just keeps roles clear. In the situation that you were talking about there, Carl, we talked earlier about how even though a parent has died, that doesn't mean easy going, because there can be real strong idealization of the deceased parent and things like that.
I have a question. I guess just to clarify whether I'm on the right track or not. The stance that I have maintained in our relationship, but I think also looking at other people in their step-parenting, is that I feel like in a nuclear family where first-time marriage and children belong to both of you, that relationships are different and you can't necessarily prioritize them as to what's more important. But I've always felt that the husband-wife relationship is the one that needs the majority of the nurturing and the majority of the attention, because when that fails, I mean, we all know, because we're products of that, we know what happens. So that relationship kind of has to take priority, in a sense, over the relationship with the children. But in a second marriage, I feel that the parent-child relationship, the pre-existing relationship, has to take priority, in a sense, over the relationship with the spouse. And I guess it seems to work. I mean, we don't have a lot of conflicts. We don't have a lot of battles. We're real fortunate that we've got a pretty smooth. But I look at, you know, example, a woman I know who, Diane with the son, that has a son from her prior marriage. The son has an arson problem. The kid's got real serious problems and he's reaching out for help. He's 12 years old. Set fire to the house. Luckily was able to get under control himself, never did call the fire department, did a pretty significant amount of damage in their living room. And the stepdad comes home, blows up, gets furious, sends him to go see his dad and says, I don't want him back, I want him to live with his dad. And so the mother is coming crying to me, and what I told her is, I believe your relationship with your son is more important than your relationship with your husband. I mean, you're the mother and this is your child. And you've got to look at that relationship first before you do with your one, you know, before you look at the relationship with your husband. But then after I told her that, you know how sometimes you give this advice and then you go, what did I say? I mean, does this really make sense? Do you agree with that? I mean, do you think that there has to be that kind of priority in those situations?
No. I think that the marital relationship has to be the central foundational relationship of the house.
Eventually those kids are going to be gone. I mean, you know, we're older and our kids are gone, and if we just concentrate on
you didn't have stepkids.
What happens is you know, you have to take that pre-existing relationship into consideration. And you have to nurture that child. But in the house, in the home, to... to create a sense of stability. I'm convinced within the house, the marital relationship has to be, you know, the foundation. What happens with kids is kids just by their nature push boundaries. You know, they're new to life. You know, what's life? Well, let's go charge them out and find out. You know, and they just keep charging until they run into, oh, there's a boundary. You know, so, and I think one of the functions of parents is to help define reality for children. You know, and to do that in a loving way and say, you know, these are the parameters of reality. If you let the child control the relationship, I think what happens is the child ends up getting real insecure. You run real danger of having dysfunction in the marital relationship. If this relationship is the strongest.
Because the child will work to break up that.
Yeah, because see, you have all of these, loyalty conflicts, fantasy, all of this stuff going on with the child. They aren't going to always be here. You know, 5 or 6 years, 7 years, and they're going to be moving on. There has to be, I think, a sense that the child has, some power, some effect within the family constellation. But I think that is important for all of the members. But the defining character of the constellation has I think to come from the adult relationship.
That's very helpful, and I think that's sound. Would you expand on a little bit if you've got now draw another circle with the other parent, if there's equal time then.
Here?
Yeah, put two people in there now
okay.
that are the sound. So now they've got two structures. Would you expand on that?
Again, what happens and where dysfunction comes is in getting triangulated. That's where, these two play off against this one. I don't have to do that at my dad's house. I can watch all the TV that I want at my dad's house. At my dad's house, we stayed up till 11:30. Why do I have to go to bed at 8? What kind of ogre are you? My dad's nice.
Well, the other thing that you forgot to mention with this, send the son to dad's house and all that. If the mother's put in the middle for one thing, but the other problem is that the stepfather will become very jealous if the mother puts the relationship with the son before her relationship with him. So then that just spirals into a whole other set of problems. The other thing that we've seen fairly consistently is teenage boys who have been with single parent mothers and then get married routinely blow out and go live with their father. Very routinely. If they've been living with their single mother, there's just something about teenage boys.
Yeah.
Another man coming into that relationship.
Yeah, we saw that very consistently in our church, didn't we? Where the mom would just have to set a limit and say, okay, you have to live by these rules, or, you can't live in this house. And the kid would just keep doing things like your arson thing.
One of the things that happens in this kind of situation is that it's a challenge. Probably for both sets of parents here. Because the kid is probably playing the same game. both places, but one of the things that stepchildren have to learn is that in different houses, in different homes, there are different rules. Well, fine, that's what you do at your dad's house. Here, the rules are, you take your shower at 8 and you're in bed by 8:30. Well, that's the way it is. From some adults that we've talked to who've been raised in this kind of a situation, they say, well, this has been a real positive. influence in terms of creating flexibility in life and in learning, not to always have things just like this or just like that, but you being able to change. So it's a challenge, but it's not always negative.
What you said was stability in both places. I think that's true.
Yeah.
In one sense, it isn't altogether new because kids pull this off in home when the parents have never got
there. Oh, yeah. I mean, triangulation, it's the old game of lets you and him fight.
Uh-huh. But I think, I really think your point about the son is that it's more detailed than just whether who the mom should lie with. There are more factors, except boy, teenager, and you answered her question by saying that you really felt it was really important that the couple relationship was the strongest, but every research that we've ever seen says the same thing too. It's not just your
opinion. Right, right.
That's a couple.
You have to nurture that parent-child relationship. You might want to, take special time with that child. Separate from the whole constellation. But again, the defining relationship needs to be the marital relationship.
I think I understand what she was saying and the fact that she feels responsible for the child and the fact that because of the breakup in the marriage, he has an extra burden.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wants to make up for that. But I was thinking of another way to look at the husband-wife relationship as being primary is that you want to model for that child a relationship which that child you hope will emulate later on in life. And so they want to see that your relationship is the kind of relationship that you want them to have later on in life.
Good point. Yeah.
And I don't think that this woman I was talking about, her situation is really different. I think in my own life, I don't think that I do really put my relationship with my son first. It's not that, it's just, I think when it comes down to, especially in the case of this woman, where living with the dad would not be a good situation.
Mm-hmm.
Living with the dad is not feasible. He's a fisherman, he's in Alaska most of the time, he's not willing to change his job.
He wouldn't be able to give the kind of care necessary.
Exactly. And I guess that's what I was thinking more in situations of where the child's welfare is at stake. If it came down to what was it for the best interest of the child, I guess those are the situations where I'm thinking you probably have to make that split and go with the child's best interest. Because I mean, let's face it, not everybody has these nice spouses. I mean, some situations aren't. There's probably some situations where you can look at the best interest for your child where the spouse might not be able to see what was best.
But you got to wonder too in the situation you're talking about with Diane and Martin, you wonder what kind of a relationship they must have, because if they had a better understanding and a better relationship, he wouldn't have suggested that the son go away.
Exactly.
He would have done something to try and resolve the problem.
And they have a bad marriage. I mean, it's just real obvious. And they're the kind of people that have sort of set themselves up for failure. I mean, she had a bad marriage the first time, this one's a bad marriage. It's just, it looks like it's sort of doomed. And I think
history repeating itself.
And so I guess as I'm listening to your answers, I think you're right. I mean, I think that model, that role model, has to be there. And I think I was thinking more specifically.